Lion's Way presents the Smelly Pirate Content Creation Show. Welcome to the show. This is Lion's Way presents the Smelly Pirate Content Creation Show. I am one of your three hosts, Eric Arneson, and with us today we have our other two hosts, Carl Steiner. Say hello, Carl.
Hello, Carl.
And Joel Barker. Say hello, Joel Barker.
Howdy's like my tagline. It's like,
oh, say so howdy,
how
Joel.
I say hi. Howdy.
To kick off our pilot episode, and I guess our entire friggin' show, Carl, can you tell us what exactly we're doing here?
What in the hell are we doing here? You know, it
what
came
in the
to
hell are we doing?
Yeah, I got to the point where it felt like we were the only people in the entire marketing industry that didn't have their own podcast. And a few months back, you know, Joel and I were a guest on another podcast, and it was pretty fun. You know, we started talking about stuff. It's like, hey, we can be in a podcast too. And, you know, we kind of started talking about it as a group, and it came down to, it's like, okay, great. We've learned a lot, you know, over the last 10 or 12 years. And we've watched the marketing of, and specifically the marketing of technology. You know, we do B2B content for mostly tech firms, and we've seen a lot of change, evolution, and we're seeing a lot of that right now. And it kind of dawned on us that, you know, maybe we could bring a somewhat whimsical bent to the whole content creation and marketing content conversation. And that's what we're here to do. You know, we're three really diverse individuals with really diverse backgrounds, diverse talents. And we've been part of an agency now for a long time in an industry where a lot of agencies have come and gone. And we're hopeful that we've got some things that people might be interested to hear, and we want to talk about them. And that's why we're here today.
Well, one of the things that I'd like to do with this pilot, or I guess I will say one of the things that we agreed to do with this pilot, was to sort of share our origin story as if we are a team of superheroes and Zack Snyder is making a movie about us, or maybe one of the better superhero directors is making a movie about us. And we have to go back to when our spaceship crash landed on a farm, and we grew up raised by Martha, probably a Martha. It's always a Martha. And learned one day that our pen was mightier than a sword. And then we moved to the big city and then discovered that we had a weakness. I don't know if it was like coffee or microbrew or something like that. And then we met our like arch nemesis, and then all of that happened. So given that sort of broad and extremely open-ended outline of an origin story, Joel, could you share yours?
Sure. And it feels just like that when I look back, and it's all in like wavy, soft focus as well. I started out as a writer, and I could not graduate from college. I could not maintain attention on anything except for writing and literature. So I graduated with a degree that I had no expectation would ever make a living. And as a result, started a career in the 90s as a technologist, started with telecom, and then became a network administrator, did some network design. And whenever I was in any of these jobs, which I would move out of them as soon as the learning curve peaked and things got a little boring. In any of these jobs, somebody would be like, oh, somebody's got to write the documentation, or we need to do a slide deck for the executives or something. And I would always raise my hand and be like, I totally want to do that, actually, which made me very popular with the teams, let me tell you. I was living in Portland and had reached that learning curve with another job and was looking for something to do, and found a company that was looking for technologists to write. And we had one client known as Microsoft, and we were creating evangelist content, which is probably a precursor to what content marketing is now. Microsoft wanted their existing user base / business fan base to know about what new technologies were coming up, how to use them, so they could sell them into the businesses that they were currently at. So we created demos, slide decks, and other materials that could be repurposed, translated, taken around the world in order to show existing network administrators what Microsoft was working on and releasing and how to do cool stuff with it. how to actually mm-hmm. back up a Microsoft mail server, which is perhaps is better now, but was an absurdly difficult thing at the time. How to secure a Microsoft network, which was also absurdly difficult. I stayed up very late a few nights trying to manage encrypted networking across domains in an Active Directory scenario. I'm sure it's gotten better. I'm sure.
If there's one thing we know about Microsoft, it's that every iteration of their software, it just continues to become sleeker and more streamlined and more secure, more amazing.
Well, we could, I look forward to us having a podcast in which you and I rehash our feelings about Microsoft yet again, only this time with mics running.
Can I see feelings in the background while you do it? Just I'll just keep seeing it over and over.
And play a violin the whole time.
I can't sing, so that would make it even better. It's like, hey, there's a guy in the background off key singing a 50-year-old song that nobody remembers. So I think that's great. Let's do that.
But I loved the work of it and creating, figuring out how to explain something that was pretty complicated, particularly something that had to be verbally presented, was such an engaging problem. And I was so into the work and I was like, this is great. I can like do technology things, which I find engaging and intellectually, and also be a writer. Unfortunately, that company, had only one client, Microsoft. And in 2008, it folded during the economic crash. I wanted to keep writing about technology, so I foolishly teamed up with another writer and started a company. We wanted to use words, so we named the company Word Lions. We did not know anything about starting a company, and frankly, I knew very little about content marketing, but I just wanted to write cool white papers that would help people explain complicated things. And through stumbles and trips and occasional smart moves and tons of help from smart people, Word Lions transformed to Lion's Way and is now this content marketing, content creation tool for content marketing officers and marketing directors who need to develop the content to explain their complicated things. I think that's a pretty good summation of it. I can carry on a great deal, but let me tell you that it's just been, it continues to be fun, and I continue to look back with the whimsy requisite for being a smelly pirate.
Do you enjoy writing outside of Lion's Way, or is Lion's Way your only writing?
You know, when I started writing professionally, I was very concerned that it would sully my creative writing or make it so that I didn't want to do that. But quite the opposite, having constant audience feedback and being challenged has made me more interested in writing creatively. And I continue to do that. I write every morning and have just recently launched a side project in which I write with a friend who is also a technologist writer about other topics, urban, rural, conversations. So yeah, apparently I like to write.
Do you ever write anything that rhymes?
Extremely rarely. Although I write a lot of poetry, I very rarely.
That's what I wanted to get out of you, because I know that you enjoy writing poetry, and you had.
I do, and that is once again not a money making endeavor, but it's very important to me. Some people raise children; that's also not a money making endeavor, but they find it important. I write poetry.
Okay. All right. So poems are your babies. Got it. No Superhero Team is a team without having like both a Superman and a Batman. And our Batman is Carl. So Carl, can you tell us your origin story now?
Well, it does involve a great deal of latex. There are nipples on my bat suit. I just want everyone to know that. I think that's important for everyone to.
Yeah, I think everybody needs to have that picture in their head.
Clearly, I think you all know I'm nowhere near as earnest as Joel. My origin story is much more filled with cynicism and derision. I was a business major. I actually stayed in school, got a master's degree and MBA, mainly because I didn't want to work. Didn't really like the subject matter all that much, but I was basically, my dad just beat me not physically, but you know, like if you want to make any money at all, dipshit, you know, get a business degree and get a fucking job that pays money. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever.
There it is, the explicit tag. We earned it.
So I did that. Yeah. And, I ended up in sales because I felt that cubicles were like jail cells without the convenience of a toilet next to your head. And I just couldn't sit in one. It was just not going to be something I could do. I found out quickly that the salespeople could leave the office whenever they wanted to. They were often lying about the fact they were going on an appointment. They were just going home or going to play golf or whatever. So I thought, yeah, I'll be in sales. And so I did that first in for industrial products for a company that maybe still kind of exists. They were a client for a while, but they got sold a long time ago. It was great, but it's a really hard job, it turns out. It's tough to actually make your quota and stuff like that. And I learned a lot about sales at that job. Had a really great mentor, a great guy who would not last 5 seconds in 2024 in an office or corporate setting. You know, just things have changed, and let's just leave it at that. Transitioned into tech in the early 2000s. I was in telecom when the dot-com bubble hit and WorldCom went down the toilet. So that was an interesting place to be. Did some work for some tech startups in the early around that time as well, ahead of the big recession. And that was back when startups were looking to actually become profitable companies, not just something that got sucked up by Palo Alto Networks. So it wasn't like we all got rich. But anyway, learned a lot in that stuff. And then, you know, after the Great Recession, I began to realize that the career path I was on was going to end at me slitting my wrists or working in a mattress store. And around that time, I met Joel, and he had a business that he was working on. And I kind of, over a period of a couple of years, sort of ended up being his partner. And we have grown Lion's Way since then. And it's just been quite a journey. We do it every day, and it feels like, you know, yesterday kind of feels like today, and today is probably going to feel like tomorrow. But when you look back at what we were doing 10 years ago, then 5 years ago, I mean, it's really different. It just changes and evolves, and you know how companies market their products and services has really evolved. And like I said earlier, it's evolving right now. So it's just a really exciting time to kind of open up the whole B2B content marketing topic and talk about it from the point of view of content creators. So,
do you remember, Carl, the day? Oh, so for those in the audience, Carl is famous for pulling the executive trick of coming to a meeting with nothing, no computer, no paper, no writing utensil, absolutely
or half
nothing.
A thing. Like he'll bring his computer without a power supply.
Yeah.
I bring my wallet without a paper, but no pen.
He does bring the wallet. Do you remember the day that you met with us very early on and borrowed my pen in order to draw a sales funnel?
Yeah, I remember that. Me? We were at a restaurant over like on the east side somewhere. Can't remember where it was. It was in a booth.
It's gone
now. We were in a booth. Mm-hmm. It was a good restaurant. They had so many more good restaurants back then. Maybe they have good ones now. Anyway, yes, I remember that day. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No. I'm glad that you remember it because, you know, once again, I got into this work as a technologist and knew nothing. And so I now talk about sales funnels very fluently, but Carl was the first person to actually visualize one for me. And like all of our learning, I think, and certainly, you know, I have taught Carl a few things along the way, but all of our learning has been like in the trenches doing the things.
First of all, Joel, what Joel taught me to do is write. So that, I mean, I knew how to write before, but I was not a professional writer or someone with a writing degree. So, you know, there was a lot of work to be done there on his part. And we were very,
now,
very
hold
lucky.
On.
Oh, yeah.
There's a secret part of your origin story involving writing that you haven't shared with us.
Yes. What is that?
Screenwriting?
Yeah. Of course, everybody who wants to be a writer wants to write, you know, the novel that everybody reads or the script that everybody sees. And so, yes, I tootled around in that arena tangentially for a few years. I firmly believe one of my screenplays was stolen and turned into a direct-to-video movie starring Peter Weller and Dennis Hopper. Yeah, you can look that up if you want, but there are elements of that screenplay that showed up in that film, and I can draw a pretty direct line between one production, because back then every actor had a production studio. Yeah, everybody had their own production company, and I can trace a line between one individual that received the script and the people that made that movie. And I never got a dime. And obviously my name was not on it. And that's probably wise because it's a long forgotten film. But
and that's the darkness in your soul that drives you forward and allows you to act as a foil to Joel, causing Lion's Way content to be such a dynamic duo of
not a duo, Eric. It's definitively a trio. So let's hear about your origin story.
When I started out, I wanted to be a writer or artist or something when I was a youth. I used to draw comic books. I still have all the comic books that I drew as a kid. Like, I used to draw comic books and be super obsessed with, like, comic book stories and all that kind of stuff. But also, I got into software development, like, programming very early on and computer nerd stuff. So when I went to college, I guess I sort of had an experience sort of like Carl's, where the whole, you know, my parents were like, you should go to college and do something that can make you some money. And I was like, oh, God, I should go to college and learn something that'll make me some money. So I studied computer science and then physics. And then I dropped out because the dot-com bubble was happening. And so there were jobs for young, starry-eyed programmers all over the place. So I worked in IT and software development, including for a couple of pretty big companies for a long time. And
you want to talk about, I'm interrupting because you did some very early groundbreaking work with e-commerce.
I did. I worked on, actually, I helped write the software that ran one of the 50 largest e-commerce websites in the world, which was pretty big.
World.
I mean, that was... this was big. It was a huge, huge, huge website that handled many, many, many visitors. This was way before Kubernetes or anything like that happened. So we were dealing with like load balancing, and I don't think we ever had dynamic scaling back then. But you know, huge websites running across. I don't know how many we had. There were always more and more web servers because we were getting more and more traffic. So it was a really, really big e-commerce website.
Before frameworks or foundational technologies, right? You were just like,
oh yeah, writing it. It was way before that. There were definitely no frameworks. I actually didn't encounter a web development framework probably until like 2009, maybe 2010. So I got pretty fed up with the software development industry. It really was lots of cubicles. I was super fortunate in that one of my cubicles was right next to the restroom, which was just like having a toilet at the head of your cell, except there was like a door in between, so I didn't have to smell it all the time. But the cubicles did get, you know, those gray walls really start to press in on you. It really sucked my soul out real badly. And so in 2008, I quit my software development job thinking I was going to go out into the wide, wide world, like 2 months before the recession destroyed the universe. So suddenly there were no jobs. So yeah, I walked away from the software development, software development industry. And I was like, I'm never doing that again, until then I started doing it again. Cause it's hard to make money doing other stuff. But I did start exploring more my passion for writing around then. And I did start getting published, and I started getting stuff published for money right around 2010, which was also right around when I had to get another software development job. So when that other software development job tanked, Joel came to my unemployment party. And we were sitting there drinking whiskey together, probably too much whiskey, because I was sort of like, holy shit, what am I going to do next? And Joel hired me to write for him. And he was like, hey, why don't you come and write some stuff for me? So, you know, there were some ups and downs there at the beginning, but I ended up doing marketing writing. And I think probably the reason why I fit into the marketing writing side of things really well is because my technology experience in the software and IT, which we now call, when we mix those things up now, we call them DevOps. in the pre-DevOps world or the DevOps world, fit really well into Lion's Way's idea of doing marketing, B2B marketing for tech companies. So I speak the language of all of the technology people. And then also I love writing for people who aren't technology people. And it was a good combination. And then now we have this, a podcast that is, fairly blatantly a marketing podcast, since we're marketing ourselves and talking about marketing. And I got my podcasting start in 2016. And it was kind of a funny origin story. A buddy of mine had a podcast, and I was telling him a crazy story that can probably never be repeated on a podcast, but I was telling him this story, and he was like, "Eric, you have so many stories. We should do a podcast." And when he said this to me, I thought he was just inviting me to come on for an episode. And I was like, "Yeah, that sounds like a great idea." And then he basically tricked me into launching a podcast in 2016. So I've been podcasting for a while now too, which has led into learning all sorts of things about audio editing and the podcasting
magic.
Podcasting industry. So that's sort of my origin story. How did I do? I feel like I went through that very, very quickly.
Well, origin story should be quick.
It brings up some things. Yeah. Yeah. Only I will carry on far too long. And the rest of you guys have both been great about it. A couple of things that when I hear you both talk, like, it makes me want to like talk about what you guys all mean to me. And a couple things with Eric is that Eric gave me, once again, I started a company not knowing how to run a company. He gave me great practice in firing people, because I've fired him twice.
It's true. I've
hired him three times. As I learned, and we all learned how to operate together and how to be successful together, and how to forgive. Thank you for forgiving me, Eric.
Well, I think you were the one who had to forgive me.
I think right? It was a you mutual fired forgiving. Me,
right?
Mutual forgiving. Yes.
So Superman fires you and Batman rehires you. I think that was how the process worked, correct?
Yeah. I think that's.
That would be a good next comic book for you to do, Eric. And early on, it might have been, I'm not sure whether it was before or after I hired you, but you did a presentation for the local Museum of Science and Industry on crypto. And
yes,
there was a room full of people in this theater. It was like stadium seating. It was very like imposing. And you were able to speak about something you know deeply and care passionately about in a way that was clear and interesting to people of all different levels. And I've always remembered that way that you're able to bring a technology topic into relevance for an audience.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I discovered in the 2000s that I really enjoy public speaking, which it turns out is something that not very many that just scares the shit out of most people. Yeah. I kind of really love. I really enjoy it. Yeah, that talk for OMSI, that was an interesting one. It was all about World War II cryptography, because OMSI was doing sort of like a science in movies series, and it was that movie where Benedict Cumberbatch plays Turing.
Surely,
do you remember
Carl
what it's called, Carl?
Oh God, that's actually a pretty recent movie. What the hell was that called?
It's not that recent anymore. Probably.
But by recent, I mean 10 years. Oh, yeah. I can't remember the name of the movie. I'm sorry.
I don't remember exactly what it was called, but it's a great movie, though it got a lot of stuff wrong about the technology, which was one of the things that I talked about in my talk. I'm like, oh, this totally ignored the contributions of these three incredibly influential Polish mathematicians and cryptanalysts who did all this work and then got completely like forgotten and brushed aside by the British military and sent off to die in various corners of Europe. But
well, that's an uplifting story.
The British got a Brit.
It's kind of funny because when Joel first mentioned this, he said crypto, and I immediately thought of Bitcoin, and it wasn't crypto. It's you're talking about the Enigma machine in World War II.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. It was cryptology, I guess, since it involved both cryptography and cryptanalysis. It's a counterpart.
That was a fantastic thing. And then also the when you came on board and we were writing for technical audiences, of course, I had been an IT administrator and I thought about that audience to a certain extent. But when we started writing things for developers, you would look at it and be like, developers going to hate this. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? And it's, you know, it's because she's like, because it looks like marketing. And I'll be like, yeah, because it is marketing. And he's like, we can't do that. We gotta make it useful and we gotta, you know, change it mm-hmm. up. And he was right. And nowadays there's like whole cultures and processes and thought leadership about how to talk to developers when marketing to them. Mm-hmm. Step one, don't make it feel like marketing.
Yeah.
And you really got us ahead of the curve on that stuff. I really appreciate it.
Well, I think that part of that happened because I had the industry experience, right? I had been a developer that had been marketed to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd been on a team that was constantly being disgusted by the horrible products that like our managers were picking because of this marketing speak that they would fall for. And we'd look at it and be like, this is bullshit. You know, this product isn't real, or this product doesn't do what we want. It just has all these pretty buzzwords in it. And our managers are like, ooh, let's buy that. So we were constantly just being thwarted by that. So I know developer pain when it comes to that sort of thing. Yeah,
that is a great segue into talking about why folks should care about what we talk about on this podcast, because, right. you know, marketing for, you know, B2B marketing for tech, be it, you know, whatever you're selling in the technology industry, you have to talk to a lot of different audiences and you have to be credible to all of them. And, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of challenge to that because, you know, many people, you know, it kind of flies in the face of SEO marketing, for example, because what you mentioned right there, keywords or buzzwords or whatever, oh, look, so-and-so fell for it because they saw these buzzwords in a thing they got. And the developers need more meat on the bone in terms of how is this thing going to work? What are, you know, is it security first? All that kind of stuff. And then the C-suite people are going to need to hear something about how it's going to make ROI happen. And mm-hmm. then you've mm-hmm. got all the, you know, then there's all the people in a company that use the product. And it's like, how are we talking to them? You know, the individuals who are using the platforms. But it's hard because it makes mm-hmm. you want to write every single piece of marketing content for every single audience all at once. And then you end up, you know, with a, you know, meat pie. I mean, it's just, it's insane. So, it's why we exist though. We found a way to credibly talk to multiple audiences at once within a single asset sometimes. And sometimes it's, you know, part of a myriad of assets in campaigns. So, you know, I think there's a lot to unpack. And I think we do bring something pretty unique to the marketplace with our diverse set of superhero powers.
There are sort of like two sides to that, right? Like one of them is you have to know your audience. And sometimes you have to admit that like you're not going to be writing something for a CEO or you're not going to be writing something for a developer. Like you can't necessarily target everybody in a company because they literally do not care about the same things. They're focused on entirely different sets of problems to solve. Tech people have technology that they have to solve. CEOs have a whole company that they have to move in a direction. So they don't necessarily care about the same thing. But the other thing that I was thinking about with that is like, we also have to learn how to speak in different voices. Each company has its voice too.
Right.
So there's like a weird switchboard or Lego situation there where you have, you know, your voice and your audience and they have to link up in some strange way, like a Voltron. Nope, maybe.
Yeah. That was three metaphors in one sentence, and I salute you. Oh, man, you.
I could do more. I could do four.
Yeah, and I think the reason that it came to being a podcast, we certainly are good at writing, and we blog, and we can, you know, communicate in other ways, is that in conversation, we've realized that these things, I want to be the nice guy here, but there are people on LinkedIn who will suggest that there are systematic ways to make this scalable. And when we see those, we always just see exceptions. And in conversation, we feel like we can talk about these things in the broader understanding so that you can make decisions on the ground when you need to that are going to be most effective. Because the challenges are not just in front of us when it comes to the market. A lot of the stuff we are going to be talking about is in the galley of the pirate ship, is how the projects are being produced and how we need to structure the teams and direct the creative. That's what I do. I'm the director of creatives, so that we make good things that move the marketing content and the sales process forward. So we hope that these dialogues can be ways to not just create, you know, five key things to know, but a better understanding of where we are and where we're trying to get to, so that you, the listener, can make better decisions.
Yeah. I think also another thing that that we were talking about with this podcast is talking to other writers.
Writers, marketers, salespeople.
Yeah. It's tough to be in the industry and not have anybody to talk to and to, you know, for instance, like one of our upcoming episodes is about word processors. I don't want to give away all of our stuff, but like, it's nice to hear other writers talk about the frustrations of word processors. Mm-hmm. You know, we want writers to know that they're not alone. There are a lot of us out here struggling with the words, trying to come up with the end of the sentence that I'm in the middle of right now. In fact, I'm not really sure where it's going to go.
Writers and marketers, the directors that we deal with every day, I think of them as being alone as well. And we will get off the phone with one, or sorry, get off a video call with one, and then an hour later get on a video call with another one, and they're having the same struggles. And we're like this weird hub that is like communicating with multiple people who are doing the same things.
All right. Well, then, Carl, can you give us a little bit of an idea of what people can expect in our first season of Lion's Way Presents, the Smelly Pirate content creation show?
Well, season one will bring thrills. It will just bring thrills, adventure, comedy. It's going to be fantastic. But I do think the real thing you're going to see is we're going to look at some big topics. We're going to talk about marketing and sales. How do they work together? Maybe some current event-y type stuff what's happening in the industry right now? Because, hey, let's face it, a lot's happened in the tech industry over the last year. And, you know, it's probably going to be more of that same kind of stuff happening over the coming, year and a half. And we're going to drill down into some granular topics. Like you said, the word processor one, how do writers write? What's standing in their way of being better writers? And then we're going to break down form factors. What are some of the pieces of content that we typically make for clients? What are those things? Case studies, video animated explainers, white papers. I mean, the list of stuff that we make for clients is long and growing. When we first started, Joel talked about white papers and case studies, and that's literally all we did. 10, 12 years ago, if we got something that wasn't that, it was kind of a surprise. And now we don't get those nearly as often because we're doing so many other different things. And that's exciting too. So a lot of it's just going to be, where are we at now? Where have we been and where are we going? And I think that's, it's a conversation worth having between ourselves and hopefully one that we can kind of expand it into the marketplace.
Well, thanks. I'm looking forward to this first season, the thrilling high seas adventures of three men with pens.
Let's just hope those prick network executives don't cancel us after one season. Fucking networks.
That's you, Carl.
Halfway through the season.
You've become the prick network executive.
Well, awesome.
On that note, I think we've reached the end of our pilot episode. Make sure to check out our podcast feed. There should be our thrilling first episode available to you right now, and I'm sure that you will enjoy at least part of it.
Gar.
Thank you, listeners.
We hope you enjoyed enduring the Smelly Pirate content creation show brought to you by Lion's Way. I'd like to thank our producer, Eric Arneson, for making us all sound smarter in post. Please remember to tip your server and subscribe to this podcast on the platform of your choice. And be sure to visit lionswaycontent.com for all of your B2B marketing content needs. Yeah.